Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. This is episode 225. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan and Justin Troop.
Hey guys.
This is in Vegas.
And Ricky Addington.
Hello.
Please pardon my voice if it sounds like I'm being a little too gruff. I kind of wore it out this past weekend talking to people and doing some other stuff. So please bear with us. I apologize. And I also apologize for the delay in getting out the Thousand Suns episode. We had some technical difficulties that I think I resolved today. The day we're recording this, January 31st is when we're doing the recording. They kind of shook it free to get it into iTunes. Remember that we also do publish things out to YouTube. So if you're watching us there, you guys got to see or got to hear, I guess, it earlier than the other guys. But again, I really apologize for that. That is not something we're going to try to repeat. And I think I got it figured out. But I just wanted to point out that it was a mistake and we are sorry for it.
All he did to fix it was perform the rite of percussive maintenance.
It was
just hit it a lot.
I posted on Twitter that like apologies or whatever to the folks. There was a couple people might have been asking about it, and they're like please impress the Omnisire or whatever. And I was like, I'm about 10 minutes from going full on orky on this thing. Anyway, thankfully I think it is resolved. Justin mentioned Vegas, and Chris and I were at the Las Vegas Open this past weekend, hosted by Frontline Gaming, and it was awesome.
It was a wild ride, I can tell you guys that much.
Yeah, giant vendor hall, lots of vendors. We'll talk about a couple of them on the show. Of course, lots of games. I think there were 500 people registering. I don't know what they actually started rolling dice with on Friday morning. It was
478.
High 400s for that. So a giant singles event, largest singles event in the world, as far as I know. And it was awesome. Again, it was great. I only played on day one. But the people that I did play were from three different countries. One guy was from South America, and I'm forgetting the exact place. The next guy I played was from England, and the third guy I played was from Canada. That's pretty cool.
Nice. That's a good diversity, and it just goes to show the reach that event draws in.
Yeah, people were coming
out.
That's
awesome.
Yeah, to be competitive for sure. The night before that, Games Workshop did their studio preview.
Sneak peek.
It was very, none of us knew what they were going to show there. I had some suspicions. I thought we were going to see something about the Adeptus Mechanicus or Adeptus Titanicus game. That was where I would have put some money on, being in Vegas there, but it wasn't. What we did see were we got the lineup for the next three codexes we can expect, and that is Codex Necrons, Tau Empire, and Drukhari. We don't know the order, but we did see a picture of a new Kryptek model.
That model looks sick.
It does look cool. Good. And
he's surfing on a spider thing.
Yeah, something like that. And then we see some, let's just say we see some monoliths in the background that look a little bit different than the ones on the shelves.
Well, I didn't notice that. Awesome.
This may be, no, I don't know. This may be one of those hidden in plain sight things. That's all. I'm just simply looking at the picture.
Maybe it's a megalith.
Who knows? And it could just be art, right? It could just be a new drawing for all we know. But I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but I'm just looking at the picture, and I know sometimes they do a little bit of that hiding in plain sight, and it's kind of fun. It's fun to speculate. We also got a preview of what I'm calling the Nightlet.
Yeah, the Nightlet indeed.
I believe it had a name.
I've seen it now. It's the Knight Armiger. This is a smaller cousin to the Knight. It's got a very similar aesthetic, and the one that we have pictured here has like a miniature chain sword hand, a melta gun on its carapace, and then what looks to be a multi-melta on its arm. So similar configuration to the Knight, but we know it's a lot smaller.
Right. The leg design is more like the Admech Walker.
Yeah.
With that, backwards chicken leg looking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the kind of the blurb here is it says it's going to be kind of like a medieval lord hunting with his hounds.
It's gonna be cool.
Yeah, the knight build is kind of, if you just want to play all knights, it's kind of difficult to find the perfect build. Maybe these things will give you some additional options. Well, obviously, they will give you more options, but maybe they'll give you a better crack at building what might be a real competitive build.
Yeah, because when I try to do a knight build, you're finding yourself around 1,500 points in a lot of cases, so you don't have too much left over for your allied forces to bring in. And of course, you're going to go with your manicores and a couple platoons, but You know, outside of that, you don't have a lot of variety. So if you can take a good beefy knight and then, you know, maybe two of these hopefully cheaper knights, that opens up your varieties. So should be exciting.
Over on the fantasy side, for the Age of Sigmar, they renounced the next battle tome will be the Daughters of Cain for the Order faction. And the video is up on the Warhammer community site, so it's warhammer-community.com. You can play the video, but they show off a lot of the models for that faction. They do look really good.
They look so good. That is going to be a fun army. I can't wait to see it on the table.
It'll be neat to see if you can mix in some of those new models from that range into the Drukhari side.
I bet it's
good. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I could definitely see it.
Might be
no
neat.
Brainer.
And they showed off a new faction for Shadespire, for the Warhammer Underworld Shadespire, and that is the Fire Slayers.
I'm very excited about that.
Yep, that's one I've been waiting for Shadespire. So I love the Fire Slayers. I don't like painting skin tones that much, so trying to do a whole Fire Slayers army would probably drive me insane. But I can definitely paint up, you know, 3 to 5 of them and have a good time with a Shadespire on them.
All right. They also announced that the winners of the Warhammer Heroes Award for North America. And I thought that was awesome. They announced people, the people they picked had a huge impact on their community, sometimes even doing charity work and things like that centered around this hobby that we love. And it's very cool to see these people recognized, and well-deserved congratulations to these folks.
Yeah, I especially want to give a shout out to my friend Mario, a local guy here, who was one of the winners. It's a fantastic. And I really feel like he deserved the award.
Yeah, I believe that they're going to get a special dinner, I think at Adepticon, and they're going to get their medal. And I believe they may even get like enshrined permanently in Warhammer World in some way, like on a board or something.
Yeah, they were showcasing some kind of plaque in the preview.
Yeah, it's so cool to see the game or the company recognize people that do this type of stuff. I mean, these are people that you would not have, like, the wide audience would have not known who these people were, and it's really cool to get this recognition for them.
Well deserved. Can't wait to see as this builds over the years how it's going to kind of grow and help shape the community in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so cool that the Games Workshop has been doing this at some of the larger events. I mean, now we said the 40K tournament is a 500 man tournament, but there were, you know, over 1,000 people there this weekend for various.
Yeah,
other
attendance
things.
Was up like 50% from the last year.
I mean, that's a lot. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers. I'm just going, you know, by things that were mentioned to me during the convention where, you know, let's just say I wasn't always in the best state to retain information, but there are definitely a lot of people there. And it's really neat that Games Workshop is doing these type of little previews for what's coming. And we get to see a little glimpse. It's a little reward, you know, hopefully encouraging some participation in these large events because, anyway, they're very fun to go to. Also in this episode, we're going to be talking about Thousand Suns. So I know we've kind of rambled about LVO for a little bit. We're going to be talking about Thousand Suns in just a minute, but I don't want to stop talking about LVO just yet because it was an incredibly fun time. If you subscribe to Warhammer TV's Twitch feed, you might have heard a voice something like this coming across the air.
Some sultry tones.
I was very happy to get that opportunity to commentate on the stream for the three games that happened on that Saturday.
It was kind of weird at first because I was watching it and I was like, oh, hey, there's Paul. And then it's like, wait, Paul's on the Warhammer TV Twitch. This is weird.
Man, let me tell you, like, Eddie, I mean, I know it comes across on the air, but he knows the lore, he knows tactics, he knows the stats of things. I mean, he's great.
Yeah. I mean, he's perfect dude to be on there. I mean, you know, you could not do that full time without having all the knowledge that he has. I mean, it's impressive.
Yeah. Great to ride shotgun with him. Again, just happy to have the opportunity, and I hope the guys that watched did enjoy the stream. We got to see.
Oh, I liked it anyway.
Oh well, thank you.
Yeah, some of us had to work all weekend, so.
Oh, it must have been terrible, Chris. Yeah.
Okay, Chris helped out with the stream too. He got to be the table man. And feed us some information about what was going on the table for one of the broadcasts.
You know, I want you guys to know that every time on that during that game that you see, you know, Paul and Eddie smile and they don't say why, it's because of something I said in the chat. And you'll never know what that is.
I want that transcript.
I was oblivious. I was just trying to figure out what to do with my hands.
You literally should have just held them out in front of you for 2 hours. Just been like,
hand check.
They have a truly professional operation there, and again, I'm just real happy they let me be a part of it for that day.
I'm just proud you didn't pick your nose or something on TV.
Well, the camera wasn't on as much. Yeah, they really do focus on the table action.
Yeah,
so they do
a good job with that thing too. I mean, it's like, I remember when, you know, people really started getting into streaming games and stuff, and I just could not get into it. But the way Warhammer TV does it and everything and puts all the info up there, like, you stay engaged with it. You know, they do a good job, and it's amazing watching, like, battle reports and stuff and how they've come along in the past 2 or 3 years from what they originally were when people just started posting up games and stuff on YouTube to what we've come to now. It's kind of insane that we can sit down and watch a game of 40K being played online and enjoy it.
Yeah, and they're hobbyists too, and they're also like, it's like a well-oiled machine. Like Dan behind the camera, like when all that say, and we're gonna cut to this or whatever, like someone has to do that, and it's not Eddie on there. Like Eddie's not switching cameras. Like they're paying attention to what's going on. They're following the cues, and they're really making a good production. So if you haven't already subscribed to it, it is very much worth subscribing to. Even if you just use it to watch in the background to paint or whatever, like you would our show or something. They put on a really good show, and that's
it. Yeah, I use my Amazon Prime free subscription to subscribe to Warhammer TV and support them that way.
That's wait, an easy what? Way
to, yeah. If you have Amazon Prime,
would have been great to know, guys. Thanks.
Well, now I think there's a Twitch Prime subscription that you can do. It's you get one free sub if you subscribe to some of these other things, and you might as well use it on Warhammer TV.
Yes, it helps unlock the chat feature, which I was trying to make fun of Paul on the entire time. So.
And then there's also you can watch the videos that have already finished. Like, you can go back and watch previous videos.
Yeah, you don't have to watch
the developer commentary and stuff. So,
oh, that's
good features.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do that then, because that was something I was thinking. I was like, well, you know, I'm going to miss this, but I'd like to have seen it. So
there you go.
I did not
sub up, and you can
done.
Tap video on demand series.
Can listen to me talk about Warhammer.
Wait, isn't that why we're here?
I know, right?
Warhammer, what's that?
Yeah. Oh, anyway, I had a great time. This is my first time that I went to the LVO. I will be going next year, no question. Had an amazing time hanging out with people. And I mentioned about the vendor halls. There was, and we'll talk about some of the vendors on another show. I won't bog us down with that right now. But there was a really nice size vendor area. Some people having new products, some established vendors, even like, you know, Shapeways, Battle Foam, Games Workshop was there. They were previewing the virtual reality Space Marine game.
Yeah, the Betrayal at Calf.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's a big production, and plus, you know, they had seminars. Chris, you were on a media seminar.
That's right. I was up there with Mini Wargaming Dave and Carl from the Independent Characters and the Feel No Pain Wargamers and Wargamer Girl. And we had kind of a Q&A panel where it was basically about content creation and what it takes to do podcasting, what it's like being a podcaster. It was a very fun, casual seminar, very sort of one of those close things where everybody's kind of interacting with each other, interacting with the audience, and just fielding a bunch of questions. It was a lot of fun. The Life After the Cover Save guys were the MCs for that. They did a fantastic job of keeping the tone light and fun.
Oh, very sweet. The painting, there was also several painting seminars there, painting contests. You could get to talk to some of these people that, you know, that you see on Twitter and Facebook with their beautiful miniatures. You spend a lot of time with them, pick their brain on some techniques. It was a convention. Like, it was a full-on convention that happened to have a tournament at it. And that's what it was great.
Yeah, having this being my third year of going to the LVO, it's great to see like the expanded direction it's taking. Because I remember the first year I was there, it felt fairly light on that side content, you know, the seminars and the meet and greets and the vendor hall and things like that. And last year they stepped it up. I mean, Forge World had its first non-Adepticon booth, I think. I don't think that they've been anywhere, or they had been up to that point, any other place to sell miniatures. And this year they just kept growing it from there. It's fantastic to see that all aspects of the hobby getting a bit more attention.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, anyway, go. If you were on the fence, it's a cool thing to do. And there's always get-togethers of people hanging out, like in the hotel bars or near the hotel and stuff. I mean, it was just a full-on community spirit there. And Reese and Frankie and Pablo from Frontline just do they put on and Jason they put on an amazing show. And I think everybody had a good time. And that's really all you can ask. Well, let's talk about some Thousand Sons. Just shift gears.
Gear shifted.
All right. So the Rubric Marines. Now, we didn't talk a lot about them on the last show where we previewed the Thousand Sons, but the Rubric Marines, if you choose to include them. Now, let me also state, Zangors are awesome. Like, I think probably the most like real efficient choices, depending on what you play. If you're playing like in tournament missions where you have progressive objectives or, you know, where a lot of command and control points or whatever, then Rubric Marines might be your end up being your go-to, or at least some number of them. But like for full on just efficiency and a lot of synergy and stratagems, Zangors are great. So I just want to get that out of the way in case we gush about Rubric Marines a bunch. But the Rubric Marines are pretty good. This all is dust rule. Add one to the saving throw for Rubric Marines if the attack has a damage characteristic of one. In addition, the -1 modifier to hit rolls for moving and shooting with heavy weapons does not apply to Rubric Marines.
And spoiler alert, most of the damage that's going to be done to you is damage one.
Really is. It's, I mean, we're talking about like bolter fire, shuriken, catapults, scatter lasers.
Heavy bolters.
Yeah, all this stuff is a damage one weapon. And you're getting, you know, if you're in cover with a 3+ save dude, it's a 2+ save. You get in cover with a Rubric Marine, you got, you know, a 1+ save. Now, I know that, you know, I'm pretty sure we're under the same mechanic that ones always fail.
Yes.
Yes.
But that heavy bolter, you're still saving on a 2+. I mean, yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, I think that it is. And this is not a shooting attack. It just says add one to the saving throw for Rubric Marines if the attack has a damage characteristic of one. So
yeah.
That makes a huge difference for, you know, assault armies that rely on weight of attacks like chain swords, combat blades. You know, Death Company with chain swords, you know, they're going to have a harder time plucking through these guys.
Power swords damage one?
Yeah.
So
I mean, at least then you'll have like the -2, right? But
yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Your save goes from a 6 up to a 5 up. You doubled your chances of that dude surviving that.
Well, against damage one, your base armor save goes to 2+, right? So yeah, so you're right. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just doing a little math in our heads first.
Fast. I'm over here counting my fingers. I'm like, wait a second. Okay, he's right. Good. All right, good dude.
Write that down, guys. January 31st, Paul Murphy said Ricky was right. Somebody take note of it.
Oh, and earlier today in the pre-show, he actually corrected my pronunciation of something. So
it's been a day of firsts.
Yep.
Wait, I want to show my entire range today.
I'm a giver to people.
Credit where credit is due.
Okay, well, the aspiring sorcerers in here. Now, I made some jokes about, you know, how long do you have to be an intern in the Thousand Sons before you're no longer an aspiring sorcerer?
Yeah, it's a good question.
This 10,000-year-old.
Yeah, they've got some longevity, so.
But the aspiring sorcerer can attempt to manifest one psychic power in each friendly psychic phase and attempt to deny one psychic power in each enemy psychic phase. He knows smite and one psychic power from the discipline of change, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. When he's got a weaker smite, though, so when he smites, a normal smite, it's one wound instead of D3, and if he gets the super smite off, it's D3 instead of D6.
Is he still rolling 2D6?
To cast?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2D6 to
okay.
cast. Yeah, but it's just when he casts smite. Now, he can cast some other powers no weaker than what they are in the stat. Right. So we'll talk about those in just a second. The Rubric Marines do get the ability to take the Soul Reaper Cannon, which is a 24-inch range weapon, heavy 4, strength 5, negative 3 AP, damage 1.
Sold.
Well, in the index, what are the costs in the index?
All the points.
It's the same cost in the index as in the Codex. We went over that on the last show, I think.
It's not.
For Rubric Marines?
for the Soul Reaper Cannon.
Heretic Astartes.
Oh, Soul Reaper Cannon is 20 points in the index.
It's 15 points in the Codex.
That's even more reason. And let's just remember, most importantly, it looks awesome.
It does. So it does look really
cool. You have to take it, yeah.
Yeah, so for every 10 models in the unit, one Rubric Ring may replace his Inferno Bolt Gun with a Soul Reaper Cannon. So
do it. Love it.
You know, you got 20 dudes. You can have two Soul Reaper Cannons.
Yeah, these guys dropping in, man. First off, they're tough as nails. But then second off, you know, that's a lot of firepower just coming out of that unit. Like, you're almost deleting units that you drop next to.
The Inferno Bolt Gun is a -2 AP. It's rapid fire 1, 24 inches. Strength 4, -2 AP, damage 1. I think that's the exact same, but they have an Inferno Bolt Pistol also, which is -2 AP. The Warp Flamer, which we talked about that, I think, a little bit on the last show, being Assault D6, Strength 4, -2 AP, 1 damage. Yeah, and I do like how the Aspiring Sorcerer gets a full power to take. Now, if we can jump over to the Scarab Occult Terminators.
I like this particular entry a lot.
Well, they look neat. You know, they got that, what is it, the Cataphracti Terminator armor?
Yeah, it looks like a variant of that. And I mean,
either that or the Tartaros, right? I think it's more Tartaros.
Could be Tartaros.
Yeah, it looks probably more like Tartaros. But up until the Alaris Terminators come out for the Custodes, I think these were the best looking Terminators in 40K. Well, I say that as a loyalist player. These were the best.
These guys also get the All is Dust rule. So they add one to their saving throw. So their saving throw is already 2+. They're in cover 1+, being the Terminator 0+.
Against, that's insane.
Yeah, against weapons that cause 1 damage.
You hit them with something AP -2, and they still get a 2+ save. I mean, that would be insane, if they were in cover.
Well, golly, I mean, let's think about this. Like Dark Reapers. I think, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I think Dark Reapers are like -2 AP.
Yeah, I'm confident in that. That I'm not going to look it up and still say yes.
It's like a lot of damage. let's just say it's -2, -3 AP. But I believe it's -2.
I also think it's -2, having been on the receiving end of some Dark Reaper launchers.
Right, so these guys in cover getting shot at by Dark Reapers, which you know is probably going to happen in today's environment, they're still saving up on a 2+ with 2 wounds apiece.
Yeah, these dudes are cheap, tough. They dish it out. You can't go wrong.
That's not even my favorite part about them. You know, is the save. I mean, the save is fantastic, and the 2 wounds is fantastic. I just feel like we've had some conversations about the effectiveness of Scout Bikers. One of the things that makes Scout Bikers effective is the twin bolt guns on the front and the number of shots that those things pour out. But you get a bunch of these guys who all have Inferno Combi Bolters that are basically the same thing, but with a better AP.
It's a rapid fire 2, 24-inch range, -2 AP, strength 4, damage 1.
Where with a scout biker, you know, if you're shooting at a squad of 5 space marines or whatever, you know, you'll pick off one or two guys. But if you have Scarab Occult Terminators, you know, you could have a squad of 10, you know, 3+ armor save guys, or, you know, Dark Reapers or whatever. And you could force your opponent to pull many more models off the table.
Well, just compare them, you know, to like a normal Terminator squad with Storm Bolters. You know, a Storm Bolter is rapid fire 2, 24-inch range, strength 4, 1 damage. But just having that AP -2, all of a sudden they are a real threat to so much more on the table. And the Rubric Marines, the Occult Terminators, there's nothing on there that's -1 AP in their entire list except, what, a Force Stave? Everything else is -2, -3. These guys, they don't care about your AP, and then they don't care about your armor save either because they have all the AP.
One of the sweet things here is that this Inferno Combi Bolter is only 3 points.
And how, I mean, Ricky, think about how much would you like to have Terminators with Stern Guard ammunition?
Yep, that'd be fun.
I'd pay 3 points for that.
Yeah. I would pay 4 points for an Inferno.
Hey, don't get crazy here.
They come standard with a power sword and the Inferno Combi Bolter. Power swords, as you'd imagine, it's 4 points. No change there. But then you can also equip them with the Soul Reaper Cannons and then something called a Hellfire Missile Rack, which is a 24-inch range, heavy 2, strength 8, -2 AP, D3 damage weapon.
I love that.
That's 22 points.
Have you seen? Do you know what it looks like, Paul? The missile rack. It's like that.
It's like they finally found something to do with all those tall Egyptian helmets. It's like, all right, let's make this practical. Let's put missiles in it.
It's amazing looking. I'm so jealous. Like, I would have totally been a Chaos player if these models were out when I started playing.
It's not too late.
No. can't change. I've talked too much trash about Chaos for, what, 20 years now? I can't switch. I'm locked in.
Thousand Suns are only Chaos because they had no alternative.
That's what makes it, like, I was telling about it. I was like, we were talking about it. I was like, this wasn't their fault, man. They didn't go into this, like, wanting to go into it. They got screwed over. And it's such a tragic tale. And I think it's just such a great story arc that they have to be able to put that on the table. It's very, I don't know, it gets my imagination going. I love the idea of them.
I consider these guys kind of like the core of the army, obviously. I mean, their models specifically designed for the range, right? But they pretty much embody everything that you think about when the Thousand Suns kind of motif comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And when all said and done, the base build on the Terminators, they come to about 40 points a piece. You have to buy five of them, so you're looking at a base cost of a little bit over 200 points, because the champion has to get a four staff. Mm-hmm. Four stave, and that is 8 points. So he's a few more points than the regular dude, 44 points. But for two wound guys, two attacks apiece, we discussed in cover having a 0+ save.
Yeah, that's a big
deal.
That's
not bad. That's not bad. And even if you're just firing the bolters, I mean, you are putting out a lot of, I mean, let's just say you're shooting at tanks, right? You're mostly wounding them on fives because a lot of them are toughness seven and neg two AP with all those shots. I mean, you can kill just about anything with these guys.
Anytime you can inflict that extra damage, especially, now it should be mentioned, where we're talking about the good things about these models. Terminators, specifically in the meta right now, are very rare because of the high cost associated with them. And when you think about, a Terminator turning its storm bolters on a tank, you're not going to turn over a lot of wounds on that. But I to support your point, Paul, it is definitely worth mentioning that even though you're investing lots of points in single models, they have the capacity to inflict damage on more targets effectively. And so it's a more worthwhile point investment, I feel.
I want to point out that you guys also have the teleport strike, so they can come down within 9 inches, of a unit. And one of the big plagues right now is the fact that the Eldar have the ability to pop that stratagem that lets a unit fire if a unit arrives, via reserves or whatever, within a certain amount of inches. And so and so that means the Dark Reapers just pick you right back off the board. If you're going to a 2+ save against Dark Reaper fire, you're probably going to have a lot more Terminators left on the board that can then shoot their rapid fire combi bolters, because you're coming down within 9, they're going to be within 12. Let's say you have 4 dudes left. That is a lot of shots.
And don't forget, unlike, when we think of Terminators, we think, okay, one Terminator gets the heavy weapon or the Cyclone missile launcher or the assault cannon or something like that. These guys can take the Soul Reaper cannon and the missile rack. So they're getting the Soul Reaper cannon and the missile rack. So they're shooting the two strength 8 shots. So they can damage a tank pretty well. I mean, they're going to be able to put damage on a tank. They're going to be able to clear out infantry. They're I think one of the more versatile Terminator units in the game, because they've got psychic ability, offense and defense there. They can do what they need to do there. They've got all the shooting. And then they're going to charge in and wreck stuff there too. I think they're one of the scarier Terminator units in the game.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, Ricky. These guys have fast become one of my favorite choices, and ultimately making me kind of rethink how I'm going to start building lists on the Chaos side. I'm leaning more towards Thousand Suns because of just everything you just explained there, the versatility, the toughness, the offense. The support via psychic powers. There's so much that these guys bring to the table for such a low point investment. especially in comparison to other
Terminators. Well, it's still 40 points, so but they're about the same as other Terminators, but they've got a better save and a better gun, a better base gun, if you ask me.
Right, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
They're bringing so much more to the table. Like, you know, everybody says...
A little bit more great, Swiss Army knife. Yeah.
Grey Knights are expensive. Well, they all got force weapons and storm bolters, which are amazing. Oh, but these guys are, like, in that category now. Like, your utility is so much more.
Yeah. They have the capability to get warp time on them, right? So if they teleport in...
They are heretic Astartes, yes.
So we could potentially drop these dudes in, warp time them up right in front of somebody, and then really get our money's worth right out of the gate.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
You would have to take, I believe, a Demon Prince. Well, maybe not the Demon Prince. You'd have to take an HQ model to get the warp time. Warp time is in Dark Hereticus, whereas these guys only get from the Discipline of Change.
Right, yeah. I mean, I assumed an HQ would have to do it. But, I mean, yeah, taking a Demon Prince, yeah.
Twist your arm, right?
No. If I have to.
I get it. Now, I'm just pointing out that they can't do it themselves.
Oh, if they could warp time themselves, it would be a no-brainer.
The range on warp time is pretty small, so you'd have to plan that out. You wouldn't be able to kind of, you know, casually do that. You'd have to think ahead. Which it's a good strategy, don't get me wrong, but you have to set it up. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about this Discipline of Change.
Sounds good.
Sweet.
FTN is brought to you by Bell of Lost Souls. Check out www.bols.org for the best daily hobby articles on the web.
Hey everybody, we are back. I want to talk about the Discipline of Change. This is one of the psychic trees in the Thousand Suns Codex. Now, there are three in here. There's the Discipline of Change, Dark Hereticus, and the Discipline of Tzeentch. So quite a while, and then plus Smite. So when you hear us talk about the 19 powers available to a lot of these guys, this is it.
In the context of 8th edition, that is a metric block of powers.
Well, let's think about the fact that your aspiring champion in your base troop unit, the Rubric Marines, gets a psychic power. He can either cast a weaker Smite, or you can take something from the Discipline of Change. And we'll go down the list here. And what I'm telling you is you probably should just pick something from this. With the way match play works, you're going to have to, you know, kind of map out what your powers will be and how often you think you'll cast them. But, you know, who knows? Maybe you need some redundancy in your list for some of this stuff. You can decide that. But here's Tzeentch's Firestorm. Warp charge value of 7. Select an enemy unit that is 18 inches of the Psyker, invisible to him. Roll 9 dice. The enemy unit is you selected suffers a mortal wound for each roll of a 6.
That's like 1.5 mortal wounds on average.
Somewhat unreliable, but yeah. Even if it is 1.5 mortal wounds, it's that's better than better your 1 mortal than wound one. Than your Smite.
And it goes off on a 7?
Yeah, and it's not the closest enemy. It's just an enemy unit with an 18, so you get to be a little bit more selective with it, although it is harder to cast than the base level Smite. Boon of Mutation has a warp charge value of 7. If manifested, select a friendly Thousand Suns character, but not demon character, within 3 inches of the Psyker. Roll 2d6 and consult the chart on the Boon of Tzeentch Stratagem, page 97, to see what effect this power has on the character for the rest of the game.
Oh, so that's a rest of the game thing.
Yeah, and it's a buff you can put on one of your own characters, but not a demon character. So no Magnus, no Demon Princes.
That's cool.
Now, what are those boons like? And is this something that stacks?
Stacks. You mean like multiple?
Yeah, if you cast it in multiple turns, yeah.
It's the Chaos Boon table from like the Chaos Space Marines book, but it's a 2d6 chart. So there are 12 different abilities. If you roll a double one, then you're a Chaos Spawn. If you roll a 12, you're a Demon Prince. And then there are various other things in between there, such as add 6 to the range of all of the character's shooting weapons, add 3 to the character's move characteristic, add 1 to any psychic test you take. You can choose the boon if you roll a 7. Choose the boon of your choice, but you can't take Spawndom or Demonhood. Subtract 1 from the hit rolls that target the character in the fight phase. Add 1 of the damage characteristics for your melee weapons. Add 1 of the character's toughness characteristic. Add 1 of the character's wound characteristic. And then I think I skipped number 5 here, the prescient foresight. Each time the character loses a wound, roll a d6. On a 6, they do not lose that wound. If the character already has this ability to similar effect, add 1 to any die roll you take or make to avoid losing the wound instead. So that
that's
is
all, the, yeah, that's all pretty good stuff.
Yeah, unless you roll two.
Yeah, don't roll twos, but that's why you have command points. So the I guess like what Chris and I were wondering, I think, is like if I have two units of this, can I hit the same character twice? Or and if I do that, does it reset the boon to the next roll?
No, I think you just get it.
Stack.
You would just get it. I would imagine, right?
I mean, it said as the stratagem. So does the stratagem just
that's a good point. Okay. You can use the stratagem at the end of a fight phase in which one of your Thousand Suns characters, excluding demon characters, slays an enemy character, vehicle, or monster. Roll 2d6 and look up the result. Yeah. Oh, boons last for the rest of the battle. Here we go. The same boon cannot be received by a model more than once. If this happens, choose a result the model has not yet received, excluding spawn number demonhood. In the unlikely event a character accruing all the available boons besides spawn number demonhood, roll a single d6 instead. On a roll of 1 to 3, they receive the spawn number result. On a roll of 4 to 6, they receive the demonhood result. So thanks for digging on that. I would have kind of
man, that sounds that. Complicated.
Well, if you get 10 boons, like in a seven turn, possibly five turn game. Yeah.
I mean you'd have to go hard. You'd have to go real hard to do that.
Well, I think also if you're playing in an open play or narrative game, there's no match play casting rules. So you could take your seven aspiring sorcerers and just be like, every round, here's 14.
One of you's about to either become a demon prince or a spawn. Let's see what happens.
Back in the day, we used to try to turn our dudes into demon princes.
Yeah. Well, I always crack up every time I see, like, I know Horton, he will bring demon princes and stuff, and he has them set up there on his little cart when he goes to tournament, just in case. You never know. Just in case that model gets turned into this or this gets turned into this, you got to have the model. You never know.
The next power is the Glamour of Tzeentch. If manifested, select a friendly Thousand Suns unit within 12 of the Psyker. It's got a warp charge value of 7, by the way. Until the start of your next psychic phase, your opponent must subtract 1 from any hit rolls they make for models that target that unit.
Good.
So your aspiring sorcerer in the Terminator unit.
Yep. That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, I knew I could count on you to pick that out, Paul.
Here's one I really like, too. This is Doombolt.
This is my favorite, too.
Warp charge value of 9. If manifested, select an enemy unit that is within 18 inches of the Psyker, invisible to him. That unit suffers D3 mortal wounds, and in their following movement phase, must have their move characteristic and cannot advance. So you hit this. You hit something obviously with a high movement characteristic. So this could be a vehicle or a unit of bikes that move 14 inches, something like that. You're trying to keep people in a certain range. Like, you know, some of these powers we're talking about are 18 inch range. Your combi bolters are only 24 inch range. So it's going to be fairly easy for some of these things to get away from you. Yeah, potentially anyway. You could half their movement characteristic. Now they're kind of in your clutches. Like say if you want your Zangors to you know overrun them. And things of that nature. Plus, you get that extra mortal wounds in there to boot. Which again, this is a higher casting value. It has an extra ability, but you're also getting some more mortal wounds than you would have been if you were casting this regular smite. Now, obviously, this is a casting value of 9. So on the 10 for smite, you know what is it, 11 or more for smite, you would have gotten the super smite. So you're not too far away from that, but you do get to half the movement characteristics.
Mm. Yeah, I think that power in the right place at the right time could really shake up how the flow of a game goes. Now, a lot of the momentum for some of these units, like say Shining Spears or the new Custodian Jet Bikes, comes from their ability to cross the table and get into threat range. So anytime you can just take a big, you know, chunk out of that movement characteristic, force them to maybe have a little bit more of a difficult charge than they would have normally.
Right.
You can really get in the face of your opponent's plans and just say, all right, now instead of making the great move, you have to make the...
And you said they can't advance.
They cannot advance. And some of these things have a specific range for advance. Like they don't have to roll. Like some of this stuff is just always advance X. Well, this takes it away completely.
That's what I'm saying. Like they cannot advance. Is that correct?
Cannot advance.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that... If my Ravenwing Black Knights got hit with that, they're done for. I mean, that's because remember, like Black Knights. Well, I think all Ravenwing they have the rule. So when they advance, they get a 4 up invulnerable save. If they can't advance, then all of a sudden I got a 250 Ooh. Point unit that is about to get shot right off the table.
That's strong with all those AP NATO bolters.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I mean, I save like 2 command points every turn for Black Knights for Speed of the Raven and for Weapons of the Dark Age. So if I get hit with that, then it shuts them down. It drops their effectiveness by. I don't even want to think about it. Basically, I got 250 points that are coming off the table.
Next power is Temporal Manipulation. Has a warp charge value of 6. Select a friendly Thousand Suns model within 12 inches of the Psyker. That model immediately heals D3 wounds. Magnus is a Thousand Sun. I would like to point that out.
Yep, that's what I was thinking.
Now, Magnus, he doesn't die in little bits and pieces.
Yeah, you're probably right, but I mean, there are times with his, he's now somewhat less survivable than he was before. And I think we might even have mentioned that he didn't have a way to get wounds back, but he does through this discipline of change, if he so chooses.
Yeah, I just don't see a situation where Magnus gets out of the, you know, I see him dying in one turn of either shooting or combat.
Yeah, it's usually like, okay, I'm going to pump all 3 Manticores and this Basilisk into him. And
but a Demon Prince, you know, or Ahriman, or, you know, something like that. I see this
say what
working.
You want. I mean, I can see packing this power, especially when Magnus gets 1 extra power.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Magnus is going to have so many powers to choose from now with his extra. I mean, he's... Well, I mean, you didn't have it before. Take it now. You basically get that one freebie, so there you go.
Yeah. And it's only D3, so it's going to be streaky, but, you know, sometimes it's going to be 3, and sometimes he's not going to die in a volley of tournament fire. The last power here is the Weaver of Fates. Has a warp charge value of 6. If manifested, select a Thousand Suns unit within 18 inches of the Psyker. Until the start of your next psychic phase, the invulnerable save of that unit is improved by 1 to a maximum of 3+. Models that do not have an invulnerable save gain a 5+ invulnerable save.
Nice.
A bit when we ran over Magnus, but I wanted to include it here in the completeness sake.
There really isn't a bad power in that entire discipline. That's I like every one of those.
It seems pretty good. I mean, this is the fact. Remember, like, your base troop guys get this. It's not, you're not taking a bevy of elites to try to squeeze in psychic powers. Like,
yeah,
your regular units can get this.
Yeah, you're not trying to, like, squeeze some librarians into your army to try to, you know, get off 1 or 2 powers. It's like the guys you were taking anyway are going to have the power. It's like Grey Knights kind of have that same ability. You know, every unit you are taking anyway has a power they can take. And it just sounds fun to play to me.
Well, remember when, like, the beta smite rules go into effect. You know, smite's going to get harder to cast, and so that's automatically going to make some of these other powers a little bit more attractive. I mean, some of them, we talked about them having a casting value of 7 and 9 or whatever, but by the time you're trying to cast your 4th smite out of one of your 5-man units or so, that number is going to creep up.
Yeah. So these guys, and I think you said it already, they have to give up smite altogether to take one of these, right? They don't get smite and this.
Let me go to that and just I'll read it out. Just in specific, occult sorcerer from the Terminator units. The Scarab occult sorcerer can attempt to manifest 1 psychic power in each friendly psychic phase and attempt to deny 1 in each enemy psychic phase. He knows the smite power and 1 psychic power from the discipline of change, so he's not giving it up.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome then, because then, you know, the units will be able to cast smite up until it gets sketchy or whatever, and then, you know, or just use these utility-like spells where they need them. I mean, that's fun, dude. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat. The Thousand Suns have the ability to kind of get tricky in combat. So let's take it. Let's shift from the psychic powers, or at least all the psychic powers, and kind of move into some of the tricks that the Thousand Suns can do, some kind of combat trick stuff. They do have the Webway Infiltration stratagem, which we talked about on the last show, that lets them essentially deep strike into the battlefield for infantry, Thousand Suns infantry units. There's also one of their relics called the Dark Matter Crystal. We talked a little bit about the scrolls and I think some of the other stuff on the last show, but the Dark Matter Crystal allows you to to teleport another unit. Once per battle, at the end of your movement phase, you can select the bearer or a friendly Thousand Suns infantry unit within 12 inches of him. Remove that unit from the battlefield and immediately set it up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. This does not count as falling back if the unit was within 1 inch of any enemy model. So it basically tells you, yes, you can hit and run with this, and yes, you can rapid fire your bolters.
That's going to be fun.
It is a relic. So, you know, only, you know, one person can get that.
Can we also just focus on the fact that this is the Dark Matter Crystal or the Dark Crystal, and then the villains who were in the Dark Crystal look an awful lot like Tzeentch? I don't know if you guys remember the Dark Crystal, but those bad guys are just basically big, giant, vulture-looking bird things.
Skeksis. They're called Skeksis. Yeah, that's right.
Chris knows what's up.
Yep. Yep. A cabal of sorcerers from the Cult of Magic created the Dark Matter Crystal.
I like the ability there to be able to reposition stuff. Anytime you can reposition units on the battlefield, it just gives
you... Well, I mean, think about it. Once you get these guys locked in combat, they're not brutes, you know, in combat.
Yeah.
Not that they're not surviving. I mean, if you're fighting a dude in Terminator armor with a chainsword, he's technically rocking, you know, a 1+ save. But, so they're durable. So they can live through that initial charge, teleport away, and then gun down that unit. I mean, like Death Company, which we're talking about as the Chainsword guys, they wilt to AP neg 2.
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry.
It's not pretty.
Did you say anything about, can they not charge once they come out? Can they charge?
Yeah, they're 9 inches away. There's nothing that precludes them from charging.
Yeah, so that's great to be able to come out and then charge another unit. Like, if you get stuck in against something that that unit isn't going to hang with, then you yank them out and have them, you know, try again on a different unit.
Yeah, and then the other kind of tricky thing they can do is the fact they get Dark Hereticus, which we talked about, to get that warp time off. Mm-hmm. So they can be kind of moving around the battlefield. Now, remember, we're talking, this is the normal guys, the Zangors on the disc and stuff already have that good movement. So you could really be everywhere and anywhere with this army.
I like that a lot. It's so refreshing when you're used to just watching Death Guard slowly march across the table and then have these guys bouncing everywhere. And I'm excited to see some blue models on the table. It's going to be fun. That aren't Ultramarines.
Zipping around.
Yeah. It's going to be cool.
A little bit lighter shade of blue.
That nice teal. This is the army my mother would play. She was obsessed with teal in the 90s. I think everyone's mother was obsessed with teal in the 90s.
Think of stuff this way. Like, you pick rhinos for 70 points with a couple of combi bolters on them. What are you looking at that point? Let's see if their rhinos get inferno combi bolters or regular old combi bolters.
Oh my gosh. If they
get that gargoyle thing.
Don't get excited. I'm just going to...
If they get inferno
deep breaths, Ricky. Deep breaths.
Yeah, no, they just get combi bolters, which is rapid fire too. All right,
about to be the most awesome rhino in 40K.
Rhino. I'm glad that I don't know why they don't, but I'm somehow glad that they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a little crazy there, but
yeah, an army of like Zangors and rhinos.
Yeah, absolutely. So for 74 points, you get the rhino to transport your dudes in, and they are able to, you know, get the, what is that? Two rapid fire, two weapons. That is a lot of shots.
Interesting. You know, and I've got to wonder, you know, some of the stuff that we are seeing, like, you know, you talk about the game kind of balancing itself and certain units having weaknesses to one thing over another. You know, we're talking about Death Company being really weak against Rubik Marine army entries, but that makes models like Sanguinary Guard that much better because
that's
the
true.
Weapons are damage, are D3 damage, not 1 damage.
That's a very good point.
That makes models that have those kind of damage weapons matter just a little bit more than they would have in a meta that didn't care about that sort of thing.
I play Dark Angels, guys. I'm supercharging the Hellblasters all day anyway. So
all the time.
It affects me. Not Excel Blasters. It might as well be what it is.
Oh, man. And let's also not forget the fact that they can still use that one command point stratagem, the Veterans of the Long War, and add one to their wound rolls made for the unit until the end of the phase. And that's a shooting or a fight attack. So they could be popping off with their Hellfire Bolters, or sorry, Inferno Bolters, and just totally wrecking folks.
It's going to be something you're going to have to care about.
Yeah, wounding things on threes and fours.
Yeah.
Sometimes twos, if necessary.
And that, like we were talking about earlier, just what that would do to, gosh, even if you think about a guard artillery, like shooting a manticore or a basilisk or something like that, they're toughness seven. So you pop that off with these, with their bolt guns, and they're pumping out, what, like 20 shots and wounding on fours with an AP minus two. So that could... that could do some damage there.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, it wouldn't work against guard though, would it? Would it?
I don't know why it wouldn't.
I can't remember the exact ruling on veterans alone.
Oh, veteran is just select the enemy attacking and add one of the wound rolls. When they're fighting anything and they just,
Golly. I'm gonna sell some of my Dark Angels and get some of these for three Marines. I'm about to convert over finally.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm liking some of the stuff they've got here. You can do Inferno Bolts as a stratagem. So use the stratagem before the battle. Select a Thousand Suns vehicle from your army and select a Combi Bolter, Combi Melta, Combi Flamer, Heavy Bolter, or Twin Heavy Bolter that the model is equipped with. That weapon is upgraded to fire Inferno Bolt rounds. Change the AP characteristic of that weapon to -2.
Nice.
Yeah, that's one command point. And you do turn your rhinos into murder machines.
And that is that, was that good for the whole game or one turn?
That's the whole game.
Man, I'm trying to think of.
So maybe this does turn into a bunch of Zangors to get two or three battalions and then rhinos.
There you go. Does it say you can only use it once?
No.
Oh man.
It says use this stratagem before the battle. I mean, that's it. Yep.
Got to take a few brigades here.
I don't know if that's where you want to be investing all your command points. But you can.
I mean, it's definitely useful. I mean, if you got a command point to burn, all of a sudden those rhinos are a threat that have to be dealt with. I mean, that's what, with 2, 4, so 8 shots at AP minus 2?
Yeah.
That's substantially scary to a lot of units, you know? And the best part is it would fly under so many people's radar because they'd be like, all right, yeah, rhino, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden you pick up 8 dice and you're like, okay, it's AP minus 2. That is going to hurt some people's feelings when they don't pay attention to it.
Yeah. You know, you're probably not going to have more than a couple of rhinos in the army, but
yeah,
that's, I mean, maybe it is worth the command point investment.
The sleeper hit of 2018.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure at all. Guys, let's wrap this segment up. And then I want to talk about a couple of tournaments that are coming up pretty soon. I think coming up in the most shortest term is that there is an Atlanta series event, which is we're a test bed for some of the stuff we do at Warzone Atlanta, coming up on February 11th. The next weekend is our team tournament, 3-man team tournament, hosted at Gigabytes. The series event is also hosted at Gigabytes. So hopefully people can make it out for that. Warzone Atomic Empire, tickets are currently on sale for that right now. And that's hosted by, Horton and Twitch, which, so, you know, we're not involved in the organizing of that part, although it is under the Warzone, kind of network umbrella. They are amazing guys. As you know, you hear Horton on the show, but, real good community leaders in their area and going to certainly try to get there and support them if we can. Atomic Empire is the place where we held our first major event.
Paul, that's where we first met.
Well, you've been talking to me online a lot.
That made it sound worse, dude.
That's all I'm saying.
Ricky, I love Atomic huge. Empire. I love Atomic Empire. Like, and first off, they have you know, a bar there in it. So
in the store, yeah.
In the store. And secondly, you could throw a baseball and hit the taco place in the parking lot right across from it. So
yeah, that was good. That was good times.
It is literally everything you need at a Warhammer tournament is right there.
Well, the folks that run Atomic Empire are very nice people, very, very good host to the event. And again, it's going to go well. It's going to be fun. And if it's not already on your radar to get to, you should get there. And that is coming up in May.
Don't buy your tickets until I get mine first. And then everybody buy tickets. Just make sure I get mine first.
Well, get your tickets now is what I'm saying. I think this is going to be one of those events because of the venue and because of the scene in that area. It's going to sell out pretty fast.
Yeah. Oh, and just for the Valentine's Day massacre, if anybody has, like, you know, need of a person on their team, somebody hit me up. I don't think I'm getting any of my friends to drive down with me, but I do want to go to that. So
I need to come down and help me run it then if you don't.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. Yeah. If I can't get a team, I'll just come help you do that. I'm an excellent judge.
I believe it.
By judge, I mean, hey, somebody tell me what this rule does. And then just I take
the consensus. Of course, you know, the amount of people just makes it sometimes difficult to judge. But the game itself flows really smooth.
You know, coming out of judging the LVO, you know, this is the easiest year, I guess you could say, that we've had in terms of rule disputes. Because most rule questions can be solved by one question. You know, a question with a question. Did you open your rule book and read what it said?
That's exactly what I was getting ready to say. What does the book say?
Yeah. So, you know, that solves 90% of your problems. Because most of the time it's just like people not wanting to accept the answer that they don't like. Mm-hmm. on the flip side, you know, you'll get less questions in general.
Right, I agree with you on that. May 19th is Warzone Atomic Empire. June 9th is the next event that we are sponsoring and helping run in the Louisville area called the Louisville Slugga.
It's the best name.
June 9th. That's going to be a blast. I mean, they've got a great community in that area. That's going to feed into the tournaments that are in Gen Con we were speaking about before. And then coming up right on the heels of that, July 13th is the ATC event, the Mammoth team event. Over 100 teams of 5 people, you know, is a favorite of ours. And really love to support Shane and Chris, the people that have been running that for years. Big friends of the show. And I don't have to tell anybody to go to that one since everyone already goes. But it's worth it. You will never be disappointed at that event.
Any other tournament I go to, it's just me. And it's like I'm having fun right here playing this army and enjoying the middle tables. But it's like when I go to ATC, all of a sudden I have responsibilities to 4 other people. And so it's like
– and me glaring at you the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. The death
stare. Whatever. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Yeah, and you're all – but I love that team dynamic. Obviously, we wouldn't be running the three-man team event. Again, that's coming up February 17th at Gigabytes. There's also an event on Facebook if you would like to check it out coming up here at the Valentine's Day Massacre. Cool name, if you ask me.
Best name.
So those – and then we'll talk about some other events, especially in that series leading up to Gen Con there. They've got a whole tournament series in that area of the U.S., and we'll, of course, try to bring some attention to all the cool events that are going on, especially since, you know, this is a great addition for Tournament 40K, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, is there anything else y'all want to cover before we wrap this episode up?
I'm up to my eyeballs in gold paint, and
well, you know you're going to be getting some Thousand Suns. They got a little gold on them.
Oh, God, even more gold. Thank you, GW, for making Retributor armor.
And trim. Don't forget that the Thousand Sun stuff is trim.
So I dusted off my Sharpies.
Yeah, you thought Helldrakes are bad. Let's play a whole army of trim.
But the same concept for like edge highlighting almost can work on trim. Well, maybe we are going to bring the Finish and Move segment back. We've had a lot to cover in the last couple of weeks, and I apologize for having that not be one of the things that we stick to. But it will be coming back next week with a vengeance.
Well, now I'm scared.
Excited, yeah. No pressure.
It's going to be amazing.
Oh, God. Now that's more pressure. I just said no pressure, and you literally just made
it.
Yeah,
it's so easy. It's going to be a 3-step process.
I can't even count that high. Oh, no.
Baby steps.
Well, guys, again, thanks for coming and joining me. Thank you all for being patient. If you are listening to this in iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating. If you're listening to this on YouTube, please give us a comment, a like, and a share. Definitely want more folks to see us on that avenue as well. Basically, wherever you're listening to us, give us whatever the positive reaction is.
2 very enthusiastic thumbs up.
Well, it means a lot to us. That's how people that haven't heard us yet get to know us. And, you know, hearing from you guys, seeing comments on YouTube, we're actually building up a pretty cool community there in the comment section. And that's not something we get, you know, in some of the other venues like iTunes. It just doesn't have the mechanism for it. So, you know, it's just another fun way to interact with the community. And how we get other folks to see that is you guys mashing that like button or giving us the 5-star rating and what have you. That's all I got now. We'll see you guys next week.
Right on.
Good night, everybody.
listening.